The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Hello, welcome back. Tom Price here, sitting in the hottest room in the world, unless that record is beaten by my guest today, Alexis Dubus. Alexis, how hot is your room right now?
It's pretty aerated, thanks. I'm in my lounge, and I'm right by a door and my router. If you just want to picture where I am, on a desk, router to the left of me, open door to the right. Here I am.
You are definitely stuck. You are stuck. I've pinned you down with the power of your password, and also a one-time password as well. That's how much security you've got getting into your Amazon account today, mate. I've had to
Really do inspire a lot of trust, don't you, in the guests that you get on. It says something about you, I think.
Guests trust me, Alexis, which is unwise, to be honest, because I'm basically going to use all of your most embarrassing purchases to my career gain. So do you know what I mean? Thank you.
I'm curious to see how my algorithms start going after this. I met my mate Dan down the pub, and I have a little 2-year old, which will probably get mentioned in this podcast.
Yeah.
But when when we just had him, I sort of went out for that first tentative bleary eyed pub visit.
Yeah.
With my mate Dan, just to sort of as you did with me, actually. I still remember that, of just you looking haggard.
Did we do that? I don't remember.
You don't even remember it.
No,
that's amazing. We went and had a pint, and you just sat down and went, "It is awful." And you look like shit.
It is awful, especially if you are.
Yeah,
the first bit is, but also I'm a very lazy man, and so it was a real shock to me to discover that I couldn't be entitled and just sort of float my way through life anymore. I was responsible for stuff. It was a hell of a shock.
Yeah, that stuck with me in those sort of 3-4 a.m. moments where I'm just lying there. Well, I can't do anything. All he wants is mummy, and I'm just lying there trying to get back to sleep and failing, and just having to be there to help her. And I just remember those 3 words stuck in my head. It is awful. Awful. And but my point being, sorry, I've digressed already, but I went to meet Dan and we were just talking shit, and I had the sort of, you know, a complete sleep deprived mentality. And we were just, it was lovely to just have a pint and talk bollocks with someone. And he said, I think we started talking about whether you could get man boobs, whether you could buy lactating man tits. For fathers that want to give that little bit extra to a kid.
Yeah.
And so Dan looked it up on Amazon and has been getting some really fucking weird recommendations ever since.
Great. So this is your way of blaming the weird algorithms on your mate Dan, basically.
Well, you'll notice I've never bought
lactating
man tits. No, I let Dan do it. No, and he's getting really odd.
I see. Dan, if you're listening, always clear the cookies, mate. You've got the cookies. I mean, that is the next level, isn't it, of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Is we start to rifle through your cookies on your computer.
Oh, no.
Oh, that would be good. That's for Patreon again, isn't it? I'll do that another time.
I reckon. Well, actually, you're sort of, as you'll see, I'm not a huge Amazon purchaser. I'm sort of more of an eBay guy. You are barking up the wrong online retailer.
Oh, there's plenty here, Alexa. Alexa?
Alexa, yeah, going full Amazon. Are you on a commission?
Oh, my God. All right, then, Echo.
That was my Alexa in the background.
Please tell me that must happen in your house every day.
Or add trash bags to my cart. I'm listening to music. You can say, by this song.
All right, Alexa, stop. There we go. Alexa.
I think you have to change. You should change your name to Echo, surely.
Yeah, really. I should. So I'm the one that has to change.
Yeah. Don't you?
We have a lot of fun with that.
Don't you trigger her every single day?
Not every day, but most days. It's quite. I'm as surprised as you that we haven't changed it.
Yeah. It's it needs to be done. All right then. So Amazon Dubus is here today, and we have got all of your purchases.
That's my porn star name.
Amazon Dubus fixing the dishwasher. 2001. That was your first order, Alexis. 29th of September, 2001. So obviously September 2001, a memorable month. And you bought Lost in the Funhouse: The Life and Mind of Andy Kaufman, which I've got as well. In fact, maybe I've got your copy, but I've absolutely got this book.
I don't have that anymore. It was you that I lent it to. I think that is my bloody copy. Give it back.
I have got this. I'm looking at the picture and I'm like, yeah, I completely recognise this. It's on my shelf. Because I don't remember buying it.
I think that is my copy. Right, there you go. Well, there's where it was bought. There you go. That's the... the book you're currently looking at on your shelf.
So that's I should really origin. Talk about this book rather than you. I mean, I never read it. I've done the classic thing of having the book to try and improve myself. But Andy Kaufman, obviously, big, important comedian in the canon, isn't he?
Mm. For weirdos. Yeah, for people. I mean, yeah, it's. Have you seen the documentary? Have you seen Jim and Andy?
No, I've not seen Jim and Andy. I've seen Man on the Moon.
Ah, oh, lovely.
Yeah. The documentary is about Jim Carrey struggling to keep hold of his marbles whilst playing Andy Kaufman.
Man on the Moon, yeah, and it's really divisive, and I still don't know what I think about it entirely. It's like he goes full method, he goes you know, full Andy, and he becomes him, and to the extent where he's just being a dick, really? Which is obviously very watchable. But you're sort of there's the moment where he kind of spits at the wrestler guy, what's his name? I've got to think of the song now, Mr. Fred Blessy. Oh, there you go, Mr. Fred Blessy. There we go.
Thank you, REM. Wrestling.
Yeah, thanks, REM. The Great Beyond is my favourite REM song as well.
Oh, do you know what? Let's just play a little bit of The Great Beyond. Here we go.
There's nothing up my sleeve. I'm pushing an elephant up the stairs. I'm tossing up punchlines that were never there. Over my shoulder, a piano.
Yeah, it was like absolutely. That's nice.
I'm tossing out punchlines that were never there. It's a great line.
I've had a real REM resurgence recently. I don't know if it's something to do with my 90s hankering. And maybe. We talked about this with Matt Ford a few weeks ago. We just are clawing our way back to the 90s, like Andy Kaufman clawing his way to the edge of sanity. I'm just trying to find my way back to the 90s somehow.
Well, I'm going to recommend something else as well, which you won't find on my Amazon purchases because I bought it from the man himself at a talk. Don't Look Back in Anger, but it's... a cracking book. It's basically interviews with, I think it's about like 30 or 40 different people from the Britpop era. It's by Daniel Rachel, who was in a band himself in the 90s. And it's just cutting together lots of interviews he's had with like Oasis manager.
Oh. What? No idea, mate. Absolutely. We are two parents here with our recall ruined by late nights.
No, trying to relive
early
the
mornings.
90s.
It's just pointless.
Alan McGee. But Tony Blair's interviewed in there.
Oh, really?
Alistair Campbell. Various people who were involved in Loaded magazine, people who were involved in working with Chris Evans and loads of like all that. It all comes back incredibly, and it's really fascinating just hearing it through different people's perspectives.
Yeah,
Don't Look Back in Anger, really good book.
It's amazing how I just remember my parents going on about the 60s and thinking whatever, and now here I am doing it with the 90s, which is rather a disappointing version of the 60s, let's be honest, but there you are. Right, so that is our home decade, Alexis, and we will discover that more as we go on through your Amazon history. So Lost in the Funhouse, the life and mind of Andy Kaufman, a troubled comedic genius, but someone who is inspiring to you, no doubt, because of course in 2001, where were you comedy wise? Were you in your life? I mean, we should sort of say cards on the table. We were good mates at uni. I'd left uni at this point. Were you out in the world in September 2001, or were you still at Warwick?
I'm kind of surprised that was when I bought it. I don't think it was that long ago, was it? Maybe it was. But, well, it obviously was. I'm not calling Amazon a liar. obviously, Alexa's listening. I wouldn't dare. So 2001, I was just... Was it September? I'd have just left uni. I'd have just I stayed on for a year. Yeah, we did sketch comedy together.
Yeah,
and Edinburgh Festival together. And then in 2001, I had just finished my sabbatical. I was doing a sabbatical year as a the communications officer of the students' union.
I remember you had an office, and I was very impressed. I think I used to use your computer for my Hotmail account.
Yeah, you did. I had an office. It was,
and that was the last office you ever had when you were about 21 years old.
Yep, unless it counts my little desk here in the corner of our kitchen, which I do.
Next to the router. All right, so Alexis, 2001 then, you are leaving uni and you are out in the world and your Amazon purchase history dies for several years. 2002, nothing. 3, nothing. 4, nothing. it goes dead quiet. And then begins...
Yeah, discovered eBay. There you go.
Well, there you are. But then begins a series of... There's lots of music in the early years of the millennium. Things like Josh Rouse. I've never ever listened to Josh Rouse. Any recommendation there?
Yeah, definitely a very well, knowing your indie sensibilities, in the first few albums were definitely very sort of Smiths influenced, I would say.
It's do you like the Smiths, Alexis? I didn't know that. Smiths. Is that something we've got in common? Because you and I are both massive Morrissey and Smiths fans. I mean, we'll get onto that later on. Weirdly, you've got even more keen on Morrissey since he's become a racist, but we'll get to that, Alexis. Don't worry about it. We'll get to that after.
Right, we're definitely not getting to this now, are we? You're just going to leave that there, and that is not true.
Oh, we've run out of time. Come back on another time to defend the racist Morrissey. So Josh, okay, good. Josh Rouse. I've never listened to Josh Rouse.
The Good Starter album is 1972, Nashville.
Well, you bought 1972 in 2005. I mean, do with that what you will. 4th of March 2005 is when you bought 1972.
Beautiful summer album, actually. Yes, good summer album. That's a good one to start with. Yeah, you say a lot of purchases. I only compared to what my CD collection then became.
Yeah,
there was nothing at all, because I still at that age, and still do to some extent, love a record shop.
Yes, I know.
I felt almost slightly guilty buying CDs online.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think 1972 I got online because I couldn't find it in UK record shops. And Nashville I first heard in Fop Records. I remember it really well. It was in Fop Records in London.
Oh, I'm going to go to Fop. These are shops that I fully intend to go and just throw cash at, almost in a charitable way. There's loads of CDs and things I've got on my Spotify, but I don't know. I need to go into Fop and spend some money in there, because if shops like that go, I don't see the point in life. Is that over the top to say that?
Quite agree. Mm. When we had our little kid, I had to go and flog a load of limited edition, special edition CDs, that sort of, just to make some space. And it was like, and these were all quite dear to me, and
I thought you were going to say to make some money then for a second.
You can get so little money for these now. I probably could have made more money on eBay, but I went and took them to Sister Ray Records on Berwick Street and just kind of like got nowhere near as much as I paid for them. But it was like, there you go, I know you'll do all right out of this, probably you'll find there's some really niche stuff in there that people will really kind of rifle through and get. So it was kind of, that was my way of giving back, I guess.
Those shops must be full of slightly sad looking men in maybe their 30s or 40s trudging in with a box.
In my case, 40s.
Yeah. We're just like with baby puke stains on their shoulder and a load of indie records. I think I can't have these anymore.
Right. Yeah, he loves a record. Like, this is the thing, I've introduced him to records and he makes me play records now. It's lovely because he loves the motion of it and just the needle on the... It's great.
I've got a record player in the loft and
I can't touch him.
That's MC Hammer, mate. I think I need to get the record player out of the loft and actually get the kids into it, because they are so used to just walking up to a well-known smart device and saying, Alexis, play, you know, Justin Bieber or whatever. And I think to show them an album, I think it's time that education happened. Listen, 2006, this is a good year for us to talk about, because you've bought lots of interesting things. The Gilmots. God, you bought this limited edition enhanced CD, right? 2006, for 15 quid.
Oh, God, did I? Well, I think Sister Ray took that off me for about 2 quid.
Oh, God.
If that.
Love the Gilmots, though. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant band. I think you might
really underrated.
Yes, yes. Should we hear a bit of the Gilmots? Should we listen to a bit of a Gilmot song?
We're Here. How about We're Here?
Here you go. Good, man. We like them. So that's the Gilmots there. And also, you've bought Pulp, the Complete Peel Sessions. Brilliant. These are all ticking so many of my boxes. And then a band, and I should say for you, you know, we've had loads of comedians on this podcast, Alexis. You're not the first person to like, say, Pulp.
I'm not special.
Or Morrissey or whatever. But this is the first time we have got Gene, the John Peel Sessions for $8.99. It's the first time. One of my favourite bands of all time. And now... if you will, ladies and gentlemen, indulge me in talking about Gene. I just really like them. Just think they're great.
Great.
Just loved Gene.
Yeah,
so good.
Martin Rossiter. He's wonderful man.
What is it about Gene? Why do you love this band?
Oh God, it's just full on indie angst, isn't it?
Yes,
isn't it?
It's like full. Yeah, yeah,
really. Yeah, I mean, it was, and also he's not turned out to be a knob, so that's good. Yeah. That helps, doesn't it? Because he was sort of, I think they were always kind of, they were unfairly dismissed as being a bit Smith's light, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they were, and that comparison was even to the point where he was called Martin Rossiter was called the Rosser.
Yeah, that's right.
Morrissey was Mars.
Godfather. But like some of those old tracks, what was the album I bought? The Appeal Sessions.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there's a lovely version of London Can You Wait on that.
Yeah,
which is just a beautiful track. But I mean, it's like all of the 90s. Again, going back to that book, you sort of to Don't Look Back in Anger, you just go, oh God, there was some good stuff going on there. If you ignore sort of all the Britpop wars, do you remember that when it was Blur versus Oasis with probably both of their worst singles?
Yes, yes. But
just some of the great indie records that you got, even from those sort of one-hit wonders that you'd get, just some really great ones that came out. Do you remember? Was Echo Belly?
Yeah.
Which were great.
Manson.
Oh, Manson, obviously. Yeah, yeah,
loved,
yeah.
I Manson. It's true. There was a whole, there was a proper indie side to Britpop. I loved a band called Jack. Oh, do you remember? I was obsessed with Jack.
Yeah, yeah, Jack were great. What was it called? The something age.
The Jazz Age.
Jazz Age. Yeah,
on YouTube. Go and have a look at it. So it's interesting though, isn't it? And how you kind of look back at this music and you think, I'm not going to like it as much, and I'm going to realise it was just special at the time, and other people will hear it and think it's crap. And I am just blinded by how much it imprinted on me at what was a pretty difficult time when I was a teenager and that sort of age. And just this music was just what made everything okay. It was what cured me.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember Ultrasound?
Yeah.
Because I don't remember any of their songs except I'll Show You Mine, which was lovely. And I remember buying that single. I used to, at uni, they basically had a little in our students' union, in the sort of marketplace bit, there was a genuine marketplace there, wasn't there, every day, and you could go and they had like a CD stall that would come there every, I think it was like every Tuesday.
Yeah, posters and CDs, get your posters and CDs.
I go mad rifling through all the CD singles there, and Ultrasound, yeah, I love that one, mainly because it was a great song, I'll Show You Mine. And I think it was a 4-track CD, and I remember the fourth track, it had like the two B-sides on, and then the fourth track was I'll Show You Mine, brackets, pointless version, which was exactly the same as track one.
Mwah. They just had
so
we 90s. We need a fourth track, or just put one on again.
Just the audacity.
That is good.
So indie, the indie angst, it was a perfect time. I was, you know, fresher at uni and was going through lots of indie angst and was kind of, I was always an indie kid as a teenager as well. And so it just bloomed at that time with some brilliant bands. Yeah, Manson, I remember them playing the Students' Union. Absolutely superb.
And it's interesting to see that here we are in 2006 and that lives on. You still keep buying the stuff. Because I guess 2006...
I bought the green vinyl of Six by Manson about 2 months ago.
Not gone anywhere. No,
not at all. But it does. It had that passion. It had that sort of untamed youthful passion about it, didn't it? And overly dramatic, of course. But that's what music should be.
Yeah, yeah. It was somehow, the melodrama of the whole thing was almost like, it was the next step for bands like Spandau Ballet, almost, in the sense, not musically, but in terms of the self-importance and the pomposity
of course,
of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fantastic.
Oh, I bought so many embarrassing things, pink CDs and a toddler dancing.
All right, let's head over now to 2008. So this is a good one. Swearing, a social history of foul language, oaths and profanity in English. I mean, you're a wordsmith, Alexis. So is this good? Is this helping you with the poetry of finding the right swear word?
Well, I'll tell you what this did help me with, my first ever Edinburgh show, which was about the history of swearing. So that's, you'll see a lot of sweary purchases.
I see.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of sweary books around that time.
Okay. Let's have a look at the reviews of this. Blasphemy from Beowulf to the BBC. A delightful, accessible and thorough examination of the subject. Highly educational. Amaze your friends with archaic obscenities.
Yeah. And I remember that I think the acronym of that title almost spells shit flop. which I enjoyed a lot. Swearing, a social history of foul. Anyway, but
I mean, should we write a review on your behalf? Do you think? Do you want to jump in and write a review?
What does that shit flag? Oh, write a review. Yeah, that was a seminal text for that show.
Okay, so add a headline: seminal.
Oh, are you doing this for me now?
Yeah.
Nice one.
Seminal text.
A seminal text for potty mouths.
Yeah, hang on.
I didn't know this was part of it. I didn't
as
know,
a potty mouth, this is basically my fucking Bible. Yeah?
I mean, you're paraphrasing, but sure. Paraphrasing beautifully.
Thanks.
Sure.
What year did you? What was your Edinburgh show called? Which you did off the back of this?
It was called A Ruddy Brief History of Swearing, nice. And it was so seminal text. And my it was kind of a seminal moment for me. It was my first having sort of gone up to Edinburgh with you and yeah. our ilk as little oiky students doing our thing, doing our sort of remarkably well received,
yeah.
profane sketch show.
The surprise of taking Uber Sausage, which was a show we did in Edinburgh from what 1999, and just we took absolute lowest common denominator smut and filth and stupidity, and people liked it, and that was what was so pleasing about Edinburgh was finding people like yourself who had yeah. a similar approach.
Finding our sweary people. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So that was after years of doing that and just watching in awe. I remember like that year 99 was the first year we did it. I remember sort of going up and just seeing Simon Munnery and Adam Bloom and Phil Kay and Stuart Lee and just all these incredible performers and just being, I had my mind blown and not ever seeing that, like holding that aloft as the dream, but never really kind of expecting to be doing. Not well, no, I don't think I ever did. And then so it took me that long. It was 2008 that I finally felt ready to actually do a solo effort.
I can't believe it's as late as that. And 2008, what size venue were you playing when you did that swearing show?
So the first swearing show was done in, it's now called the Nickel Edwards down Nidri Street, and it used to be called, oh no, other way around, it was called Nickel Edwards and it's now called the Banshee Labyrinth. Right. And I think it's one of those ones that claims to be the most haunted pub.
Oh, yes.
Along
yes.
with millions of others.
Yes.
And it was dank and dirty. They've done it up a bit now. But when I was doing it, it was called the Banqueting Room, I think it was called. It was right at the back. And it was this dank, dripping cave at the back of the pub. And I would occasionally see people just raise an elbow, just like have a little stretch and just like, oh, slime coming off the wall on their elbow.
But that sort of helps, right? Because if you entertain people and make them laugh when they're suffering physically like that, you are, you know what I mean? It's almost something else for you to overcome as the performer.
Yeah. But it was 6 p.m. there, just off the Royal Mile in Edinburgh. And it was about swearing. It was the easiest sell in the world. Oh, so I was packing that 40-seater every
yeah,
day.
Yeah. So that was 2008, was it?
2008, yeah.
Okay. Because then 2009, later on in the year, you buy... There's a few things censored, what they didn't allow you to see and why. The story of film censorship in Britain. And then there's a few other bits like that. Nudity, a cultural anatomy. Are you researching for another show or are you just a very intellectual pervert?
Pervert. That's both. Can't it be both? The lead up to... that leads quite wonderfully to my... next show. There we go. What a segue. That was, it was the a surprisingly tasteful show about nudity.
Ah.
Which was, well, I did the swearing show again in 2009 on the good old £5 fringe down in the Tron.
Right.
And then the following year I was very lucky. I sort of got someone from Adelaide Fringe came to see the swearing show and said, oh, mate, you should come out and do our little festival.
Really? Was he, was he looking after wild animals at the time and wearing court?
That's what put a thumb up my ass.
That's who
it
I'm
was
getting
weird.
From
wrestled
that voice.
Me to the ground. I thought it was overly friendly, that was a greeting. Anyway, long story short, I ended up touring this show all over. I ended up playing all over Australia and New Zealand and Europe and just took this show. This show just took on a life of its own, and it grew and grew and grew. It became a touring show, mainly because I then had a 90-minute show from all the swear words people had given me in other languages. That section became enormous.
It's fantastic.
So it was amazing. And again, I never expected to have that sort of level of success with it from my first show. I suppose you could argue I'd been building up. I'd been doing my circuit stuff for quite a few years.
Yeah. You've been honing your skills.
Yeah, I purposely didn't want to kind of do that in Edinburgh. I didn't want to go, oh, here's all my gags that I've been doing, mainly because I was bored of them, but also just because I thought you've got to step it up in Edinburgh, you've got to do something else.
Yeah.
And that was something that really appealed to me, like the swearing element. And anyway, so that then toured around the world for like a year and a half, really. And then
it's just insane. Hang on a second.
Insane,
I mean, you went to Edinburgh, your first Edinburgh in 2008, and then off the back of that, oh, mate, can I just put that up there, and then do you want to go around the world with your show? I mean, it's just that's actually the dream, Alex.
Well, it wasn't anyone. Well, you say that it wasn't anyone producing it. I sort of had to do it all myself, so it was all quite a big risk. I had to just hope that people would come. But again, it's like it's swearing. It sells all over the world. It was a remarkably canny move on my part.
You are a fucking genius, and also a
takes to know a. The Aussie phrase goes. Actually, no, my favourite Aussie phrase is, well, we're not here to fuck spiders, mate. Do you want to go to the pub? Yeah, we're not here. Do you want a beer? Yeah, we're not here to fuck spiders.
Get yourself some gas and air and breathe deeply.
We're talking on the phone while he had his arm inside my vagina.
In my head, I was saying, could you go and see if the anaesthetist is free? And what I was actually saying out loud was, help me.
CD player doesn't work.
I was like, I'm starving. Why am I fucking CD player? Where's my playlist?
That's One Torn Every Minute with me, Beth Murray. Available now from Great Big Owl.
Help me. My mate bought a
toaster. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. I'm talking this week to comedian Alexis Dubas. So 2008, great year for you. Let's go into 2009. Okay, you've had an amazing time at Edinburgh in 2008. Your show has gone around the world, which is ludicrous. I mean, you know, you're talented, Alexis, but you're not that good.
it's the swearing that sold it.
Yeah, yeah. No, you are brilliant. That's not a surprise to me at all, nor was it a surprise to me. And then, I love this, January 2009, you bought How Proust Can Change Your Life by Alain de Botton. I really like this. I think I might have read this years ago. And there's something I remember from it, which is the sort of entry-level Proust, which is the thing about swallowing a toad. Do you know that thing?
Well, I know that from that book. I've never read Proust.
No.
So that was my way of like pretending that I had buying that book.
This is right, exactly. This is your York notes to Proust.
This is my, yeah, and there's a reason for that because of what happened in 2009.
Well, okay. Well, so hang on. So go on.
Well, you can probably guess from the Proust reference and what I do, what most of my career now entails.
So Proust being a French, was he misanthropic? He was certainly very grumpy and grizzly, wasn't he? Or was he not?
He was quite misanthropic. He was quite world weary, and he lived with his mum, and he had plenty of ailments, and he was kind of, yes, he was he was a unique character.
And yet weirdly uplifting. Funny how a grisly French character can please an audience. And we'll get onto that in a second. But he had this thing about swallowing a toad. You cannot be happy every day. You cannot be happy until you've swallowed a toad every day. Which of course means you have to do something a bit shit that you don't want to do. Right? Go for a run. Talk to your kids, eat something healthy, whatever it is. You can't be happy until you've swallowed that toad. And then it's so true. For the rest of the day, you feel purged and happy. It's an incredible rule to live your life by.
Yeah. He was actually, like you say, a remarkably positive man in many ways, the way that he looked at the world. Miserabilism.
Yeah. And also,
becoming
in 2009, we've got Serge Gainsbourg, A Fistful of Gitans.
French in 2009 for reasons that are about to become quite obvious.
The Discovery of France by Graham Robb. It's good to see your Amazon purchase history really is a direct link to what you're doing with your comedy career, which is in 2009 giving birth to
Marcel Lucon.
Wow.
Yeah, there he is.
Wow. There he is. You sounded just like him then.
It's weird, isn't it? That was where I went. Because when I did that first Australian leg, I'd started doing character comedy a bit as well. And I was running the wonderful sweaty den that was Falling Down with Laughter with Si Thomas.
Yes.
And we started doing the experimental nights. And so that was when I first started being Marcel. And while I was doing the swearing show in Adelaide that year, I tested out a 40-minute show with Marcel in an even sweatier top floor. It was pretty much a rooftop shed in the height of the Adelaide summer one shitty fan in it, just in what was then a full-on thick French suit that I bought from Camden Market, which was just dripping by the end of every show.
It's fine, mate. That's what Febreze is for. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's incredible. What starts with one shitty fan, you now have legions of fans. Marcel is massive now.
It's kind of weird. Like, I wouldn't say massive, but I've got a nice following.
Oh, come on. Look, 2008, you did your Edinburgh show to 40 people. What number have you peaked at, gigs-wise, with Marcel?
Well, last year's Edinburgh show was in a... Oh, God, what was it? 275?
Yes, not bad. In Edinburgh.
Seater.
Just to be clear, dear listener, if you're not familiar with the Edinburgh thing, that's big. That's really, really big. Most people in Edinburgh do between 40 and 100 seats. So it's a success story that I love because you're a close friend of mine, but also it's amazing how you go along, you're doing stand-up comedy, and you pick at threads, Alexis. You pick at threads, which is what this podcast is all about. We're picking at threads when I find one random product on Amazon here, and you pick at it, and suddenly there's a story. And it's what you do. You have a little idea, you pick at it, you keep pulling, and suddenly you have this fucking rope, this whole career. You know, it's just it's inspiring for people who are creative. If you've got ideas and stuff, keep pulling at the thread and it becomes a rope, and suddenly you've got a really stinky suit on and you're basically French.
You've got some really sweaty threads on that you can't wait to take off. You're Febrezing. Yeah, I think that's probably been the biggest contribution to the hole in the ozone layer above Australia is me Febrezing that suit in 2009. So sorry, everyone.
So Marcel Lecomte begins, and the comedy really kicks on for you there, doing Edinburgh's, doing all the shows. And you're buying loads of books, lots of Kurt Vonnegut's.
Yes, lots of Vonnegut.
Big fan of you, but Sucker's Portfolio, a collection of previously unpublished writing. Bought that in March 2013.
Yeah, I still haven't read all of that. I work my way through that every now and again. I love Kurt Vonnegut. He's probably my favourite, I would say.
Oh, give us the sell then, please. Did Kurt Vonnegut write And So It Goes? What's that book called?
So It Goes, yes. So that's his most famous one. So Slaughterhouse-Five.
Slaughterhouse-Five, thank you, yes.
Is his most famous. Yeah, So It Goes. And again, a lovely mantra to sail through life with. So It Goes.
So It Goes, yeah.
And he puts that after everything, after, you know, spilling some salt to the nuclear bomb, to the destruction of Dresden, you know. So It Goes. It happens.
It's an incredible book. I've not read any of his other stuff.
Have you not? No. Slaughterhouse-Five is great. Trying to think of what's the best one after that? I would say Galapagos was all right. What's the one I'm thinking? Breakfast of Champions is what I'm trying to think of.
Okay.
I probably prefer that to Slaughterhouse-Five, actually. Breakfast of Champions, because he kind of he makes one of his minor characters a lead character in it to really brilliant and weird effect. Kilgore Trout, which is who's a struggling science fiction writer sort of also a bit destitute and just kind of and gets himself into the weirdest situations. And it's how it's all about fate and about him and another character coming together. And you know, he tells you the ending in advance, but you still really want to see it coming. And it's a beautiful book. And he's just got such a wild, vivid imagination, and someone who lived through, you know, who lived through the bombing of Dresden, and who sort of had undoubted PTSD from that, was still able to kind of see the world in this slightly magical way. And
it's interesting how you've got this. I guess it's Tears of a Clown, but you know, I know you as one of the most buoyant, happy, chirpy people. Like, you are a relentlessly, infuriatingly optimistic prick. And
so it goes.
Yeah, and so it goes. But and yet, this is what I've always found interesting about you, is that you have the dark side. Like, I've got the dark side, my Morrissey, my Gene when I was a kid. You know, that's sort of the depths. And you've got this dark side to you. Like, you've got, here we are, look, Leonard Cohen, November 2016.
You want it darker?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You've got it darker, but you've got the dark side. You like all comics.
The flame. People often say that who've seen me do Marcel, but never met me in real life, and they've said to my face, "Oh, you're surprisingly nice." They expect me to be a French arsehole.
Yeah,
I think it's having that outlet, isn't it? It's catharsis. It's getting all your sort of darker thoughts out.
Yeah, it's a sponge, isn't it? You've got all these books and all the bleak things you've got in your music and your films and your books and all that stuff. It's somewhere to put all the dark thoughts.
It's like you look at like a lot of comics that go to that dark side, most of them, and actually they're lovely people.
Yeah.
And you look at the people that are trying to be too overly chummy, and a lot of the time I just go, oh, I don't know if I trust you.
Yeah. Michael McIntyre's a killer. So, not true. Here's a good one. October 2016, raw terracotta humidifying hydra stone tobacco moisture clay stone.
Oh, lovely. There it is in its entirety. Yep. I bought that.
Why?
That's not my house, mate.
That's you. Can't blow that on your house, mate. What is it?
That was, oh God, that's because I bought some Green Go, which is like, I think it's also probably part of that purchase, which is like, it's non-toxic tobacco. So right. You can use that, so you can smoke weed with it and you don't get the tobacco.
I see.
And it keeps it from drying out.
So it's somewhere to put your non-tobacco.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a little stone which you wet for quite a while and then pop it in with the Green Go non-tobacco tobacco.
So it's literally a stoner stone.
It's a stoner stone. It's a stone for stoners.
Amazing. Also, you are giggling like a stoner at this as well. That's
oh, I am. I made you bought a total
stone. October 2016, you bought The Sea by Iris Murdoch, which is officially my favourite novel. Tell me you've read it.
No, it's on my... I still haven't. It's so annoying. Because when was that bought?
November 2016.
2016. I should have got in there before we had Ronnie. Because now I have no time. I have piles of books just mounting up by my bed.
It's the greatest torture of owning a child is all the books you can't read without.
No, I've been meaning to read that for so, so long because everything about it just sounds up my street. And I'd never read it. It's just one of those books. It's like, oh, I definitely should have read that.
She's one of our greatest writers. And I don't think she's celebrated as much as she should be. She's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, everything about that sounded like... It sounded like Every Day is Like Sunday, the book form. To me,
yes,
basically
trudging slowly over wet sand. Yes, it's about a guy who moves to the sea, and he's obsessed with a woman he was in love with years ago, and he thinks he sees her in the distance. And no spoilers, because it happens very early on. Turns out it is her, and it's just 300 or 400 pages of this intoxicating, psychological, compelling as well. You're desperate to find out what's going to happen next. It scratches an itch in all of us. The distance of time disappearing, and you're suddenly in touch with your past. It's like time travel for this guy, and you're with him every step of the way. She writes. Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, I was sold already, but now, But I mean, I feel that's probably not the best one to read under a tree in summertime, is it?
No.
I'll save that for autumn and winter.
Yeah. It's definitely not a poolside book. What else have we got here? The Houseplant Expert, the world's best-selling book on houseplants, maybe to grow your marijuana, seeing as you're such a stoner, Alexis. This is April 2016 you bought this.
You'd think so. Present for mum.
Oh, lovely stuff. Lovely stuff. Because mums need weed too. And then what have we got here? 2016. Hello. DS Laboratories Revita Hair Growth Stimulating Shampoo. You're a hirsute man in a suit. What are you talking about?
I'm not at all. I'm receding really? Like you wouldn't believe. I'm receding like the sea.
Good.
Thanks. I don't know if it's done anything. Probably not. It's probably one of those things where it's like, I haven't noticed the difference, but maybe if I hadn't have bought it, I'd be entirely bald by now. So I keep telling myself that, and I think I've bought that again.
I according to friends of mine who've done it religiously, it does make a difference.
Oh, does it? Oh, good thing.
This stuff.
Keep purchasing that overpriced shampoo. Then.
Yeah, but I tried Regain, whatever it's called, for years and years. In fact, we talked about this with Dane Baptiste on another very nice episode of My Mobile Toaster. And he bought loads and loads of it, did it, and it just made no difference at all. And I think, do you know what? In fact, during lockdown, I've shaved my hair and it's fantastic.
Oh, God.
It's such
I bet it is.
It's such a release.
I've never shaved it, but I've sort of, I know what I look like with wet hair, and I look weird so with no hair. Like I'm a hairy, I need, yeah, like it's like when I've had this beard ever since or stubble. Let's not call it a beard. Let's not give it that dignity. I've had this shitty stubble ever since 2009, since doing Marcel, and I rarely get rid of it. I occasionally get rid of it for an acting job or something, and then Pauline just looks at me in the weirdest way, like, you're not my husband.
Yes.
It just doesn't look right. And me with no hair at all, it would look terrible. So I'm just trying to keep onto it as much as I can. I'm a hairy man. That's the thing. I think of myself also as a hairy man.
Yeah.
So I don't want that to change.
This is an important part of your identity. So not only have you got the depths of the indie music suffering, you've also got to be a man's man, be rugged and covered in hair. Come on, Alexis, embrace it, go bald. It's wonderful. It's so freeing. Here's a lovely moment. Look, we've talked earlier on about how this 1 year you've done your swearing tour and you have the beginning, the tiny thread of Marcel. 24th of April 2017, you've bought What We French Think of You British and Where You Are Going Wrong by Marcel Lucant. You've done it. It happens periodically on the podcast. You bought your own produce.
I bought my own produce. And I did that because, actually, this sounds like a humble brag, but it's not. It's clearly not. I bought my own book. It sold out. The book sold out, and actually the publishers went bust, I think. But it also sold out, so they won't make it anymore. And someone, I think I'd failed to put sold out on the website, and someone bought it, and I was like, oh shit, I've run out of copies. My stockpile at the house had run out, so I didn't want to use my one copy that I sometimes that I've kept for myself, that I'll sometimes read from on stage. Yeah. And so I had to buy my own book to sell to someone else. For not much markup.
Well, yeah, I mean, it happens. It's £2.29 now, by the way, to buy in paperback. That was very nice.
It's a toilet book at best.
By the way, you can buy a new copy. Guess how much a new copy costs on here?
£2.50.
£119.
Shut up.
I shit you not a jot.
What?
Yeah.
That's not true.
One new from Bridge Books UK. £119 plus £2.79 delivery. So
of course.
I can add it to your basket. Do you want me to pop it in your basket or not for £119?
I've regretted this instantly. Yeah, go for it. Is it signed?
No.
How long is it? Can you tell how long it's been on there?
I don't know. I can't see. It's just there. I'm just writing you a review now. Wonderful book. This wonderful. And then my review says, but it's... Hang on. Not worth £119.
You're not typing that.
Of course I'm not.
Such a dick.
You might need to go through your reviews after this recording. Thanks, mate. All right. So you bought your own book. Go on. Yeah, okay. Sorry. What?
That's inflated my pride somewhat. There we go. No one's ever going to buy it, but it's nice to know it's on there for that. A first edition, and only it was only ever a first edition.
That's what you're worth. That was your own bit of Proust right there, Alexis.
There it is.
You're leaving something on the cave wall, my friend. That's the important thing.
My own shit from my hands.
July 2017, the Pro Breeze Ultrasonic Aroma Diffuser and Humidifier with 7 color-changing LED lights. That's July 2017. It's an aromatherapy mist for home, office, and spa. I mean, do you want to...
Still got it in the bathroom.
Really?
Never use it.
I mean, it's plug-in as well, so that would be an awkward suicide, wouldn't it, if that fell into bath?
What a fragrant way to go.
The body's been here for 4 days, really?
Yeah, it smells delightful. Yeah, I'd have to have open casket, obviously.
How was his funeral? Everyone was very relaxed.
Everyone just chilled the fuck out.
I'm sorry that we've talked about your funeral, Alexis. See the dark side of Alexis, the dark side. This is what we're finding.
You'd pop the little stone in my mouth so I didn't dry out.
November 2018, Sleeping Heads 2018 now. Has Ronnie arrived by this point? Is he here yet? Is he here?
What month?
November 2018.
Yes. Ronnie's very much in the world. Okay. He's out. He's escaped.
Well, let's see if you've changed as a person because of the birth of your child. You bought Prefab Sprouts, Prefab Sprouts, The Sound of Crying. When you've got a baby. Are you mad?
Yep. No, it was obviously on my mind. It's a great song, that. It was non-album track. There you go. That's how I justify that. I only had it on vinyl, and I wanted it. And I didn't, because I love Prefab Sprout to death. I wanted to give them the 79p that was owed to them for that.
Right.
Could have just ripped it off YouTube, but I wanted to, give back a little.
Give them their money. Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. The sound of crying when your baby's just arrived, it's so perfect. Also in November 2018, you've bought one pair of white formal gloves, a Santa men's fancy dress tuxedo guard parade, or indeed snooker referee. That's what this looks like. Any idea why you've done this?
What year was that?
2018, November 2018. Some white gloves. Magician type vibe.
Think. What was that?
I don't know, mate. Oh, you've also bought, hang on, very, very close to that. A week earlier, in fact, on the 7th of November, you bought a Napoleon costume. So I wonder if you there bought you the go. Napoleon costume, well, but it didn't have white gloves, which makes it completely inauthentic.
Cool. That's what I was going to go with, because, but I'm surprised that I was that prepared. Oh, no, I would have been. No, that would have been the right time. Yeah, that was for my, for my 2019 Edinburgh show, numero 10, or N-O-dot-dix. There's a little, still punning my way through Edinburgh there.
You still got my swear words coming out. Yeah, very nice.
For my 10th Marcel show. There we go. That was, so we've really come full circle now. There we go.
Yeah, you see?
Swearing. So it was for my publicity shots. My favourite publicity shots I've had, actually. A guy called Scott Chalmers, who's a brilliant photographer.
Right.
In his little attic in Southampton. And it was, I had the full Napoleon garb, but as you say, did not have the gloves. And that's bang out of order.
You've got to have the gloves. It's all about the detail, Alexis. All about the detail. So that was you preparing for Edinburgh again, but this time with a baby. April 2019 now, so not too distant from where we sit here in 2020. You've bought some men's high-vis waistcoats. Now, I've got a slight obsession with high-vis jackets, right? You've got three BlackRock men's high-visibility waistcoats.
Mm.
I thoroughly believe I can put a high-vis jacket on, and there is something about the British sensibility that as soon as the high-vis jacket is on, I could do almost anything and get away with it.
Well, especially now you've shaved your head.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that just is... That's a security man.
Do you know what I mean? As soon as you've got a high-vis jacket on, people just listen to you in this country. It's so weird.
It is weird, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's why I bought them. Okay. I was feeling...
You were a gilet... Were you being a gilet jaune?
It was a gilet jaune gag. It was basically the band. I had a band last year in Edinburgh, which it was just my favourite time. It was the first year in Edinburgh. Got to the midway point and just went... you have the break. You don't have to have the break, but most sensible people have that.
That's just one night off, yeah.
The one night off that you're allowed. That was the first time in Edinburgh. I'd gone, oh, I don't want this. I'm going to keep going. I was having so much fun because I had a live band. I had my French band. The ruse was that Marcel's band was meant to be coming over, like a 20-piece Parisian troupe, an incredible band, the best musicians you've ever seen, who died in an orgy in Montmartre in an apartment that wasn't fit for that level of sex. And so I had three guys, basically, and the joke goes that in France, there's a rule that you have to pay a musician even if he's dead. with the budget left, I had to get these three guys on parole as the band, and I obviously abused them throughout the show, and then the gag at the end was they all take off their jackets and they're doing a gilet jaune protest.
Amazing.
So that was that.
What is your connection with France? Because you do speak French, right?
I do. My dad's side is the Francais. So yeah, I love it out there. I've never lived out there. I lived out there for a month for doing a clown course, doing the Ecole Gaulier.
That's a huge thing, the Ecole Gaulier clown course, isn't it?
I did the summer course. I did a month. It's not huge. It was 7 hours a day of being insulted, but
I mean, you could just go to a restaurant in Paris for the same.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that is... the other person I know who did that was Matt Bainton, who is a very successful comedy actor and writer. Tell me about that. When did you do that? When did you go on that course?
That course was 2015.
You see, this is what I was thinking you'd say, like, 03, 04 when you were starting. And did it make a big difference when you... Did you find your inner clown?
Not really. I was terrible. I was really bad. I was awful. But you could argue that I already had. That's the thing. I was sort of, I suppose, spending so much of my time there mentally trying not to be Marcel. And I always wonder if I had done it, 10 years earlier, what difference that would have made whether I'd... Yeah, I don't know. I probably would have been put off for life, actually. I probably would have been just as bad.
Oh, really? So it wasn't a very good experience then?
No, it was a great experience. Don't get me wrong. It was... I love the abuse. No, I just found it fascinating. Really fascinating for the people watching, if nothing else. Yeah. Because in my mind, the funniest guy on the course was a genuine idiot.
Yeah, right. An unself-aware idiot, an actual...
Completely.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
came, just the stuff that he did, he didn't even, half the time, I don't think he even knew he was being funny, unless he was just super, it was the reverse, and he was just super smart and knew exactly what he was doing. But no, he was this Spanish guy, silver hair, just like big grin on his face, not a care in the world, complete idiot who just, I mean, he didn't speak English. His mate had to translate half of the exercises for him, and yet he still fucked him up in the most joyous way. And oh my god, he was incredible. He was so good, and this is the topper. Found out what he did afterwards. He's a policeman.
You are joking.
I'm not joking. He was a policeman in Spain. Yeah. Didn't have a clue what was going on in the world. Because that's the thing. It's got all this acclaim, like the Gaulier School, and all you've got to do is pay and turn up. Right. There's no selection process.
So it's like an online degree, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but you get to go and live in a shitty French town. It's a really weird town. Wow. And I really enjoyed it because I was just soaking in the Frenchness as well as myself. I did enjoy it. It was just Juan alone. Fuck, it's so funny. Just okay. Had no idea.
I can't believe it. It's a copper. That's amazing. All right. So, Alexis Jubas, you have travelled the world. You started off with the Andy Kaufman book with a crazed man doing comedy, and you yourself are crazed about comedy. You've done it all over the world, including a shit bit of France. And now we find you stuck because of lockdown. So let's see what you've been up to in the last few months. And there's lots of things like, there's a lovely memory card there. Ooh, look at that. 200 gigabytes for 25 quid.
Oh,
I'm biting my fist, mate. Biting my fist. 100 gold padded CD size bubble envelopes. Oh, yeah.
Still flogging my CDs on eBay.
There you go. Are you kidding me? Is that what that's for?
Yeah, it is. It is. Still flogging them.
Buy them on Amazon, sell them on eBay.
And also, they're a perfect size for the Marcel Lecomte fragrance, which genuinely exists. I have a fragrance now.
You're joking.
I'm not joking. Insouciance de Marcel Lecomte.
How did you get that? When did you get that made?
I got that made for the Edinburgh show, for the last Edinburgh show. I wanted to have the most overblown merch stall in Edinburgh. So I was selling an oil painting for a grand.
Did anyone buy it?
Of Marcel. No, it's hanging on my wall. But it didn't cost me that, obviously. It wasn't an oil painting anyway. It was the canvas print, but it looks great on the wall in the Napoleon garb with the white gloves. Really makes it.
What about the white gloves?
And I thought also, let's get a fragrance made as well.
Oh,
why not? Because I've got a friend of a friend who I now class as a friend. It runs 4160 Tuesdays Limited, which is a wonderful independent perfumier out in West London. And we just jokingly talked about it. She goes, oh, Marcel should have a fragrance, shouldn't he? I was like, damn right he should. And lo and behold, Insouciance was born. And I went into her laboratory and we made a fragrance. And the base of it, I think, is a fragrance that Brian Eno got her to make. She made a load of fragrances for Brian Eno, and there was one that he didn't use, and it was called Take Me to the River, I think, and she used that as the base.
Surely he would approve of the sampling. That's okay, isn't it? He'd like that, wouldn't he?
Lovely. that's a genuinely great gag. And you know it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone.
We mixed in like opium and smoky back rooms and cognac, and we just put all these things at Marcel. And it's actually a really nice fragrance. Carl Donnelly bought some after my show in Edinburgh. Went, mate, this is really nice. Actually bought some. And I've been shipping it out to there was one to Slovenia last week. Shipping it out to Australia, to all around America, Miami the week before. People are buying this because people online have been reviewing it and loving it.
Oh my god.
Never seen my comedy in their life. Don't even know what Marcel Lecomte is.
This is like Richard E. Grant. You know, he's got a line of smells as well.
I did not know that. That's great. I like that him and Marcel are in that.
Here's what we're going to do. The first person who can help me get 10 new followers, right, on Twitter at ToasterPod, I will pay for them to have a Marcel Lecomte fragrance sent to their house. So if you're listening to this now and you'd like that fragrance, you can win it. It's surprise, right? I'm not sure how this works as a format. I haven't really thought this through. At ToasterPod is our Twitter account. If you get me 10 new followers, right, and then you tweet me and tell me you got those 10 friends of yours to follow at ToasterPod, I will pay for Marcel to send you a fragrance. How does that sound? That works, doesn't it? As a format, we can do that.
That works. I think that works.
We've never had a prize before on this show. That's absolutely huge if true. Listen, we've had fragrances. And by the way, does the fragrance smell anything like you sweating in a loft in Adelaide? That's my...
Yeah, I've still got that suit, and I squeezed out some 2009 vintage sweat, that is, as well. That's real. That's a really good year for sweat. That was the sweatiest venue. It was a bountiful vintage.
Just with a bit of Febreze mixed in. And again, the last few things we see you buying, once more, the yin and yang of Alexis, you've bought Contagion on the 3rd of April, because fuck it, who wants to watch the news all the time? Well done there.
It's all right, isn't it? Have you seen it?
It's fine. It's all right. It's not as realistic as News 24.
It's not, is it?
You've got that, and then that's the yin. And then the yang is you are still performing a giant green screen with photography clamps, because of course so many comedians are performing from home. They've got the green screen set up, so you can project anything onto your background, probably your own face on an oil painting, knowing Marcel Lucon. And you're still doing gigs now. In fact, this is a good chance, as we get to the end of the show, tell us how we can see you doing your gigs and where we can follow you on your Facebooks and all that business.
Well, I use that green screen to record some, I've been recording some poems of mine at home and around, and you can see that on my YouTube channel. I'm also using that green screen as a backdrop for Marcel, as my house is not what Marcel would consider suitable or good enough. So I'm using that, and I'm doing Cabaret Domestique every Friday night at 9 o'clock, which is me hosting four different international cabaret acts trying to do what they do, as I say, from the discomfort of their own homes.
trying
to do hula hooping and not smash the shit out of vases, trying to do fire and not get the neighbours called in. It's great fun. It's really fun acts.
Cabareting from home, CFH. That's a brilliant thing.
If we're going to go full circle, which I think we should, with Andy Kaufman, I'm also recording and filming a thing. It's a character that has their own channel online, which has no links to me whatsoever. And I'm not even going to say the name. It's out there, and I've been filming it. It's a whole new thing that is not linked to me in any way at all. It's my Tony Clifton.
Okay, there you go. Right. Your version of Tony Clifton. Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
It's nothing like Tony Clifton, but it's out there as it's in, just throwing it out into the ether.
Does it involve someone sitting in a chair by any chance?
Nope.
Oh, right.
Well, it does, but not what you think.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Well, a very weird ending there, Alexis. Listen, Alexis Jubas, thank you so much for bringing all of your Amazon purchase history to my mate Bought a Toast to the Dark Side of Alexis. Embodied now in Marcel Lucon. I mean, there you go. You know, what is originally using your indie music and your philosophy books as your sponge to absorb your dark side, and you put them all in Marcel Lucon. And that's worked out pretty well, hasn't it?
Yeah, that suit is very much like a sponge after every performance. So, yeah.
If you want to smell that sponge, sniff the sponge, enter the competition at ToasterPod on Twitter. And I will send one lucky tweeter in her who gets me 10 new followers. Not even that many. I should really go for 100 there. I should have aimed a bit higher. And we'll send you some of Marcel Lucon's juice. Alexis, I love you. Thank you.
Oh, I love you. That was fun.
Thanks for coming. Bye, Alexis. Bye.
Bye. No more.
That was Alexis Jubas. There you go. That's another episode. Thank you. Thank you for listening. What a lovely bunch you are. Can you hear that it's bath time in my house as I record this book? That is my youngest son crying live on my mate Bought a Toaster. So I'm going to have to be quick because I've got to go and do some hashtag, parenting. I would love it if you could get me a soundproof studio. That would be ideal. No, if you could give us a follow on, I always go on about Twitter, but I've got Instagram now as well for ToasterPod, at ToasterPod, I think, on Instagram. And we've got a Facebook page as well, My Mate Bought a Toaster on Facebook. Give us a follow on there, and I share all sorts of stuff. On Instagram, there's quite a neat thing you can do. Not Instagram. Oh no, here's the other one. God, I keep forgetting about all the things. There's a thing on Amazon as well. Right, here's what you need to do. Go to my Instagram. I hope you're following this. Also, my wife just kicked off with the kids. Can you hear? She just started telling them off. It was very funny. So here's what you need to do. Go to Instagram. Give us a follow, at ToasterPod on Instagram. And there's a link there. You'll see a link to my Amazon influencer page, right? I'm an influencer, gang. And if you go onto the Amazon influencer page, you can then see loads and loads of my guests' items. You can actually see them in the flesh. You click on the pictures of my guests, and then you'll see some of the things that they have bought. So I'll do one for Alexis, and there's a few other people up there as well. Sorry, that's a lot of homework for you to go and do. You don't have to do any of those things, to be honest. Just continue listening. That would be ideal. And I'll be back next week with... Can I announce who's on? I think I will. Shappi Korsandi is going to be on next week, and she's wonderful. So I'll see you then. Lots of love.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Can't face those Twitter notifications? Forgot to watch anything but Netflix? Dreading the video conference small talk at 9? You need a news vitamin, you know. You need the Smart 7. It's a brand new daily podcast that puts your brain into gear. Everything you need to know in less than 7 minutes. You need the smarts? Hey, we got the smarts. The Smart 7, every weekday at 7 a.m. Available right now on Spotify and all the usual places.